With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello, hello, come on in. Welcome to this week's Wolves Fancast, a special one after the post-Cardiff carnage. David Evans here on the podcast, Mr. Stu Hall.
Back.
You are back, without the Sean Dyche voice as well.
Yeah, I've got a full voice back, and the last time I was here, Bonatini had just scored.
Really?
Yeah, 4 months ago.
Well, welcome back. Yeah. Welcome back. Dan is here as well, Dan Hughes.
Hello.
Adam Price.
Showing a lot of class.
We are showing a lot of class. Well done.
Agreed.
Well, we're doing this podcast because we haven't done one for a while, and obviously we had to do one post-Cardiff, so we're going to talk about that in a second. We'll do also the preview against Derby, and we'll do Twitter Corner as well. But gentlemen, I've got a feeling that it might be happening now.
What?
What?
What is this? Dave?
We're a slight feeling that something might happen this season.
He goes away for a few days, comes back a refreshed man.
Had to get my mind out of the cycle of Wolves.
Is this where you're sitting in a different place? Or has this changed since I've been away?
I've always sat at this place.
Anyway, you sat at the head of the table before.
Oh, we've changed things then.
It's been the host chair for a while, that has. I just think he's bathed in the bath of positivity since we've been away.
A bit of Radox, a bit of positivity. A
bit of bubbles.
What a mental game that was, everybody, against Cardiff.
Games like that don't come around too often.
Because we thought, really? Obviously, we haven't been here for Borough and Hull, but after Borough, you just thought, wow, can we have any more heart attacks at the end of a game after that? And then we throw in Cardiff. Just incredible.
I'm trying to think of like the last game of where there's been two missed penalties such a short space of time, and the only thing I could think of straight away was Paul Gladden in Heracles when he missed two in a minute, funnily enough. But yeah. Mental. I mean, it was mental where I watched it. Christ knows what it was like in the stadium at the time when it was going off. I forgot the chart, wasn't it?
The Friday night lights are glorious. I mean, Middlesbrough was one thing with the shirt removal, which did happen spontaneously. Yeah. And I did get it back. That was the thing. As soon as I did it, and then I jumped down two rows, and I thought, I've got no top on now, and I've got to get on the couch for 3 hours. But some kind gentleman or lady threw it back. Like, actually, can we mention it? The flag has been found.
Oh, yes, yeah.
The Nuno flag has been returned to its rightful owner, so well done. But yeah, Cardiff was... so many people have never sang for so long, so loudly, after a match. I mean, we were in there for a good 10, 15 minutes after the final whistle. I mean, the whole ground was empty, but we were just there. Neves had his Man of the Match award, probably rightly so. And all the players had gone in, and everyone was still there. And then we got outside, and the Punjabi lads were there with a doll and everything. No attempt to get back on the couches whatsoever. It was just absolute chaos. And there were people jumping on each other, hugging each other. And I jumped on Alex, and he was very pleased. But Chris picked me up in the air, which takes some doing. And it was one of the things where, like Marky Brothers said, that you'll never ever forget this night. And you won't, because it was superb.
Well, it was incredible. Wolves won 1-0 away to Cardiff, thanks to a lovely Neves goal, which we'll touch on in a bit also. But there was probably two or three talking points of this match, which wasn't the 93 minutes of the match we saw. It was the last 2 minutes, and it was the two penalties that happened. Firstly, the Ruddy save. Lovely save on Ruddy, we must say.
Super.
Nice save.
Yeah, superb. Nice save. To get down to it.
And then obviously the penalty happens, we save it, and you think, right, that's it, we've done it. We've won the match. And then, what, a minute later, another penalty. Is this penalty you want to talk about? Was it a penalty? Because I see the replays, it's outside the box
From where we were.
That's right, isn't it?
We were in the, obviously, the diagonal, to the right diagonal corner, if you look at it from the telly. And the penalty area from where we was, it was in. It was in the penalty area. If you look at it straight on, it's on the line. But he fell in the area. That's always going to be given. But before the second penalty, Ruddy palms it away as well, which was another superb save, which don't really get mentioned apart from Mikey Burrow's commentary. That was a superb moment because that could have easily gone in.
Because he popped up right in front of him.
Yeah.
And he actually was already going down. Because the ball, I remember, was going one direction. He was going down to get it. And then I think, I can't remember, some kind of player got a flick on it. Mm. So the ball then sort of going up, hence he pulled it or clawed it well like a cat.
Yeah.
He probably said that at the time as well when he did it. And that's when it went away. And then, I know when I first saw the foul, I thought initially it was outside. Because I thought, you know, when the first replay, I thought, yeah, that looks outside. But then the more you watch it, you think, you can understand why he's
don't get wrong, it's definitely a foul. Cavalero just basically threw himself.
It's definitely in the area. Yeah. I mean, it definitely is a foul. I have no idea what Cavalero's doing. Because when you watch that back, he attempts to do a tackle, then just slip, but he's let both his legs and go and just take.
Well, someone told him, put your body on the line, probably didn't literally like mean it.
Yeah, so that was, I mean, the foul aspect was never in doubt, but I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was telling because there was more people angry at the first one being given than Cav's being given. There's a few people saying it. Blake, for one, screaming his head off, saying that's not a penalty. He threw himself into him, and fair play to the kid. He got up at 2 o'clock at 2 o'clock in the morning to fly over from LA to London to get a train from London to Cardiff to watch that match.
I thought that was vindicated then in the end.
To then come back on the Everton. So
that's a MasterCard priceless moment. That is.
And he's got glasses now as well, amazingly enough. So he saw everything perfectly. But yeah, I mean, no one reacted. Everything, oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, there's one. For the second penalty, it was in the box. No, but it was just a rush of blood again, like the rush of blood from at Middlesbrough the week before. Them moments where everything gets all a bit too much. There's no self-control with anyone. I mean, that's... If it wasn't so close to the end of the season, you could think, is this going to start getting a problem now? But no.
But problems. The penalty happens, you're thinking, right, I can't believe it. We're going to give this away. Hits a crossbar, goes out, and then we just kind of, from what I remember, did they kind of have a glancing header that just went wide straight from that?
Yeah.
And then that's it, game over. And you just sit there and think, what have I just witnessed? Like, what?
I haven't experienced a chaos, a couple of minutes of chaos like that since my first sexual encounter. But at the end, it was the same thing. I was high-fiving everyone around me once it was all over. It was madness.
Anybody were there?
Just me and a tissue. it was chaotic. Way. It really was. At the time, I was still like fuming. Oh, we don't deserve this anyway. We didn't deserve 3 points. My mindset at the time was, I didn't think we deserved 3 points. And I thought we was going to get what we reaped. But then looking back after, the game management again was perfect. At the start of the game, I wasn't happy with the front three that he put out. I thought it was a bit negative. Bonatini still looks way off the pace. A foul behind, going to be one that chases back, just doing the defending. And Jota's still working his way back, isn't he?
You just kind of got... I got the feeling that it was more to do with resting players and, what, 3 games, 7 days. And still got to recover from the Battle of Borough.
But I thought that should have been the mindset going into the whole game. He should have had an eye on the Cardiff game in regards to resting players. I think, like, Saïss looks spent against Hull. And quite a few others did. Bonatini looks like he's running with weights on his calves still.
Bonatini looks like he's carrying Robert Taylor on his back. That's it. He's just...
Weird for Bonatini, given this is a guy who, scored 12 goals before Christmas?
Yeah, exactly.
And it just seems like a completely different player.
But he's...
He should have buried that chance as well.
He's playing anyway with the mentality that he knows he's not going to be here next year anyway. So,
but you'd think, put yourself in the shop window then, wouldn't you? You'd think, well, try even harder because you've got nowhere to go.
But then I think...
His lack of confidence is completely gone now.
Confidence is completely gone with him. I mean, some of us thought we can kind of see what he's trying to do when we saw the team line up. Because having like Calvin Costa off the bench is
nice. It's great to have off the bench.
Nice to have, what some call a luxury. But as we said, one of them can play, surely, and the other one, you know. But
I think you just agree with what you said. Like, bombardment, wasn't it?
Yeah, Afobe's not someone you play on the wide right. That's not the right.
He didn't do too bad. Looking back at the game, for the role he was probably given, did work well along the line.
I just wonder if it was game management whether Nuno thought. I think somebody put in our group chat that, you know, Warnock wouldn't have thought of that team sheet. He wouldn't have prepared for that. So that would mix it up. But also, did Nuno kind of think, right, let's play this to rest players and let's try and still be in the game, as it were, by half time, and then I've got Costa and Cavalieri to put on second half.
But I didn't know that. Like, I think Costa was not playing. I think he'd had
baby Costa,
baby mini Costa,
a baby Chino. Can we go for that?
He's going into under 23s. Like what I've heard. Baby Costa. So fair enough. That's fine. But it all worked out anyway.
It worked out. All worked out in the end.
This is weird because when we were there, not one person questioned it. Everyone thought, we saw the team and thought, well, that's attacking. He's playing Felby and Bonatini. I mean, the three of them are going to rotate and they're not going to stay in one place. And we all thought the exact opposite, that it was actually, we were going to go at them.
It's funny because all the Twitter comments are much different than that. They saw like Steve from Sedgley. Steve Sedgley? Steve from Sedgley has gone, oh, Nuno, what are you doing? I think you know, he's earned a bit of faith by now, isn't he? Nuno, it's come a bit of slack.
The game management was superb.
But then full time, and just the celebrations, and just the sheer, like, what the hell? Just what the hell have we just seen?
Beer was flung.
Once the full time whistle, I said to my few mates, it was literally one of them like computer game moments where the end credits just came down with some sort of like sci-fi keyboard. It was perfect. You can't buy moments like that. I said to you earlier, like an Aguero moment, missing two penalties in injury time. What odds would you have got on that before kick-off to miss two penalties in injury time? When you look in, we're up. Dave, we're up. Champions are locked.
I kind of get the feeling though the last few weeks that we've had that look, that promotion look that you don't, sometimes we've not had in weeks. Like Borough, for example, you know, two sendings off, they score in 94 minutes, you think, right, that's it, they still have a chance right at the end, which goes wide.
So the daring chance at the end, I still don't know how he missed that, because there was a lot of the goal still gaping for him to hit. It's just the same when he looks in.
Yeah.
It's almost like the gods have looked at the financial fair play rules and thought, we've actually passed this, so we can have some luck now. We've only spent £2 million on our agents and not 5.5 like Villa. Interesting.
You look at the Neves free kick, which is like brilliant, and you got that chance that Gunnarsson had from literally Woody was like stuck in the mud. He was beaten, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And on another day, Neves, his free kick he scores from is the same as his first, and Gunnarsson goes in.
Yeah.
When he looks in.
We'll talk about John Ruddy because he saved that first penalty, and he's been criticised fairly from us for the last few weeks and other people. Was this his day of redemption, perhaps? Has he written himself into folklore, or is it just kind of his day, but the jury perhaps is still out on the whole?
John Ruddy is a superb keeper when he's busy.
Mm.
We've said that all season. The fact that he's got the best defence in the league in front of him means he gets quite stupid at times and switches off.
Well, he's got 20 clean sheets this season, which is the most in the top four tiers.
The team has got 20 clean sheets this season.
There's often the train of thought when like top teams want good keepers, they don't always look to the keepers who are the busiest because they make routine saves. You want the one with the best concentration, the ones who like Ruddy does for us, doesn't do anything for 40, 50 minutes at a time and then has to be switched on that 1 minute. And sometimes in the league, it's been noted that, you know, he switches off at the most important times, but it's similar to like what was it, Reading away? He had a good game.
Yeah,
it's similar to that as well. You know, he does have great games and good games, and he's a good keeper. It's just these few moments he has where he switches off can sometimes cost us silly goals.
Yeah, so the defence is too good for him because he's there on the beach, and then when he's being called on, he's like, Reading busy all game. Cardiff busy all game, but then you've got others like Forrest when he was beaten because he was just daydreaming and he was lobbed from what, 45 yards out.
The Burton game. There's a few, isn't there?
Norwich beaten in the last minute.
Yeah.
So we're saying that we're not letting John Ruddy have his day.
John Ruddy is I'll just beat you know, four pack of Carlin to John Ruddy because he was superb and he was working man's man of the match. He was excellent.
It's funny. Did anyone see the tweet from Jake Humphrey? Post game, basically saying that he was offered Sunderland as well, and Jay Humphrey told him to go to Sunderland, and obviously John Ruddy said, "Now I'm going to go to Wolves instead."
Okay,
yeah,
that's why he's on BBC, BT, and not Sky.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's a decision now, looking back, hasn't it? Really, I mean, Sunderland, well, they're down, really, aren't they? they need like Kevin Phillips and Niall Quinn up front for them to get them out of this hole. And they're awful.
Bring them back.
They're awful. Sunderland are really awful.
It was a great save though from Rilly, because obviously he's a big guy, to get down and palm it around the corner from the penalty from his penalty save was.
I thought the way Medine shaped up pretty much gave him the
direction. Still got to save it though. Yeah. But I mean, it was a poor penalty. Because
he had way too much time to think about it. Because I mean, it was a good 2-3 minutes before he actually took the penalty, wasn't it?
And he actually, to be fair to him, he actually did look leaner than he has done. I don't know if that's some kind of, he's got nothing to do in the international break, so he's concentrating on himself a bit. But he did look, there's something
on board at the gym.
Yeah, exactly. But he did look more agile and more svelte than he has done. That might be something to do with it. But that's why I'm no qualms about Wednesday now, because Derby will pepper him and he won't be bored for 84 minutes or whatever it is, and then cock up. But yeah, absolutely superb on Friday.
Well, we'll let him have his moment, will we? That's what we'll say.
He's earned his moment.
Let's talk about the goal in the game. Neves' free kick. It was another classic Neves, wasn't it? Classic Neves. Keeper got a little touch to it from what I noticed, but it doesn't matter because Neves scores the worldies.
Well, the commentary said it, as he was running up to take it, he said, you know, he's hoping that, you know, second time's a charm, because his first one was ballooned the high and wide, wasn't it?
He was a tester.
But yeah, someone would call that a sight, wouldn't it? I'm a little bit lower next time. And yeah, well, I mean, we've come to kind of almost expect, I mean, same way Barry Douglas, when we get a free kick outside the area, there's an air of expectancy that at least it's going to hit the target, at least.
You know, for England, when Beckham used to have five and he'd always score the fifth, it was like them kind of thing, like the one against Greece. That was the fifth one. He'd had four attempts and
he'd push Sheringham away. Yeah. And he's like, no, I'm still having it.
But this guy's 21. It's just ridiculous. He doesn't look 21. He looks like he's in his late 20s, early 30s. But this is incredible. There was somebody tweeted the other day that I couldn't name anyone in the Portuguese squad apart from obviously one person, but talking about how there's a key midfielder out and basically Neves is probably guaranteed a place at the World Cup this summer because of it, which is...
He was the guy who kept him at the Porto side last season.
Ah, okay.
So, redemption.
So guarantee Neves' price is going to go up twofold?
Threefold?
Yeah, at least.
At least.
But it was a great goal. Just...
Have you seen the young Cardiff boy?
Oh, the Cardiff vlogger. Vlog.
They're singing about is Ruben Neves. Well, what do you expect? It was 10 minutes of singing about Ruben Neves when the flares were all going off and everything, because he's wonderful.
He's a wonderful human being. Yeah.
Well, the magic man is, I've never heard him called before apart from on Sky on Friday.
The key thing of the match though was not even in the match; it was post match, and it was Neil Warnock. Good old Neil Warnock having his moment. If it wasn't the pleasant chat he had with Nuno on the pitch just after the game finished, it was these post-match comments about Nuno's actions, as it were. How does everybody feel about this first thing? Because the first question is, should Nuno have shook Warnock's hand before he went off?
Probably should have, but you're talking about human emotion here in like the title decider game of the season. And after the madness that's just happened as well, do you really expect someone... let me word it properly. It's probably not out the realms of possibility that someone might shoot off in celebration and not the first thing in their head might not be, I've just got to shake this guy's hand before I go and do anything else whatsoever. No, that's not what Pete... That's not... In Warnock said, this is what the British game is all about. But no, it's... We're trying to coach passion out of the game. No, you shouldn't be doing that.
It's not even a passion. It's just natural. I mean, it was literally seconds after the second penalty miss. Seconds. The final whistle was blown. So what, you're gonna turn to some little gremlin bloke next to you? And, oh, well done. No, you gotta. He's 44. That's what people forget. He's not an old bloke. He's a young guy who's as passionate and as agile and fit as his players, so he's going to leg it on the pitch.
And that's the good thing about the age thing, because Warnock's comments smack of like old boys game.
Yeah, it's an old school mentality.
We didn't do that in my day, so you can't do it. That's what you're trying to say to Nuno.
And I know it happened against Borough, but it is really in the context of a one-off thing as well. If Nuno was doing that every single game with like a 1-0 win, again, then you probably got, okay, maybe you should just think about this a bit more. But like Adam, you said, it's the passion of the moment.
That was another game with high drama.
Yeah.
where if he was doing it at Burton at home, if we beat Burton 3-1 at home, he could charge onto the pitch at the end of Burton and we'd be going, what are you doing? But these are two games where the emotions were high and key things happened against us. And he's not had any part of the British game at all, Nuno. So until this week, so Kenton, Borough and Cardiff, this is the first time anyone's had the moan at him about quote-unquote antics.
But this happened 12, 13 years ago with Mourinho running down the touchline at Old Trafford. What's he doing? What's this young upstart doing? We don't do this in this country. Mm. When they're not, Man United had the Champions League. What are you going to expect? He ran down the pit. He ran down the touchline.
Yeah, just beating Man United at Old Trafford.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've just beaten our title rivals in the last minute, in the last kick of the game.
After two failed penalties, when emotions are high. I mean, Pulis even stuck up for Nuno after the game, saying like you understood that. Obviously, the game got ahead of him. But after two, as I said, two failed penalties in injury time, you don't get that very often in such a pinnacle game of the season. As far as I'm concerned, Nuno should have took his top off and the lot. Ryan Giggs against Arsenal, top off against all the way down the touchline past the Cardiff fans. It was that bigger moment for the season.
I think it should have been Tamir Kitzbühel. Kit off, kicking the awnings and everything.
Yeah, electric shock there.
Thanks to Nuno as well, because post-game in the interview, he apologised to say, now you'll go back and apologise to Warnock as well. And he apologised for the Borough incident, which you kind of think it was a bit slightly out of character for Nuno to do such a thing, but very, very classy of him to do so. And then obviously Warnock, because his lack of class thing afterwards. Just a bit of poor show for Warnock that he had an opportunity there to go, all right, okay, I understand in the moment, but I will speak to him after the game.
The whole thing was in... I mean, at the time, I was angry. I spent the rest of the night, I was until 1:30 on Twitter,
just
annoyed. any tweet, anything about Warnock, I was just saying, disgrace, disgrace. Every single tweet, anything I could do. And I've calmed down a bit now, but I think the more I do think about it, what he said again, I start to get angry again. But the two interviews, chalk and cheese. So Nuno's come on and, like I said, showed his class, apologised, not just for this match, but for the previous match, Pulis. And even the Sky commentator said at the end, that's really, you know, appreciate that. Mm. So then it's all set up for Warnock to come on and, just, you know, what a class interview that was. Warnock's just set up for him just to come on and say, yeah, fair enough. But what's he said? I'm not even going to go back to my office until he's gone, on the coach to Wolverhampton. I mean, he's 70-year-old child mentality from Warnock. I'm going to get annoyed again, but it's just fucking disgraceful. On national TV, not only has he just been caught telling our manager to fuck off seven times over, he's now had the chance to redeem himself and he's made himself look even worse. And now everyone just wants Cardiff to fail.
I think
because if I'm social media, anything's to go by. But now everyone's just turned against Cardiff. Not anything that Cardiff players have done. Just what then knobhead of a manager has said.
I think when you get people who've worked on him or played against him, former players on Twitter absolutely rinsing him. I mean, Darren Hooker be coming out as well.
Yeah,
of all people, and he's just a joke. And he knows what he's doing. He's trying to deflect and whatever, but I don't think he is this time. I think he's finally lost the plot.
Well, that was the interesting thing, wasn't it? Is that no one was talking about Cardiff and the performance and losing.
Cardiff played well.
It's all about Neil Warnock, isn't it? Mike Dean must be really annoyed.
Yeah, Mike Dean,
like that second penalty, the stance for the penalty was fantastic. And you just thought, if that penalty had gone in, I think the headlines would probably have been about, was it the right decision? Was it a penalty? It would have been about old Deany boy.
I mean, it was a media dream, that was.
Yeah.
For a media's wet dream. Warnock and all the shit he was saying afterwards.
He trained all week for that stance, Dean.
Is it like Jerry Mackayle, where off camera, like the presenter, the interview was probably really rhyming up? Oh, I know that Nuno was terrible, wasn't he? So, Neil, what do you think about his.
Nuno's interview, that's the first thing the interview led him to that straight away. He says, is this something you need to think about? Mm. You know, but, and Nuno, class, just said, yeah. I apologise. I like how he chucked in there that I was managing Champions League last year.
Yeah.
And now I'm in the Championship. I love to be here.
I think Rich put on his Twitter saying that, you know, he was surprised at the interview for Warnock didn't perhaps press him a bit. Yeah, and go, kind of challenge him a bit and go, well, you're not going to speak to him?
I said that to Rich as well. I said, wouldn't it been great if the interviewer had said, once Warnock had said, we have class in Britain, I said, wouldn't it be great if the interviewer just said, okay, so... Do you think you just evidence class yourself then telling, you know, swearing at our manager and now? Are you showing class now? And it probably would have just walked off and not interviewed the Sky ever again. But it would have been great. It would have been great if that was a question that was asked of him.
Did you see Warnock's reaction when they scored the equaliser against Sheffield United? Did he take? You see him on the pitch doing that.
Did he take? Oh, yeah. At the end of the game.
He was giving it large, and then they just scraped the draw away at Sheffield United. That was like 94th minute, the equal or something daft like that. So his reaction then, and then times it by 10 with the two penalties that they've missed, you'd have that emotion.
You've seen, that's a good point, though, because it's exactly the same as hypocrite Steve Bruce. Exactly the same.
Yeah.
That, oh, no, we don't do this. We don't celebrate that team.
Oh, yeah, and he was hugging with the backroom staff.
Yeah, he's done it before, and he's done it again. But he's a novelist, so we'll let him get away with it. But it's exactly the same. The two of them, they've tried the mind games. It doesn't work.
Anyone who writes a novel is exempt
from criticism for being pointedly stupid.
Warnock could probably tell you that, oh, I managed to shake his hand first, though, before I went on the pitch doing all that shite.
I know, but that's just Warnock all over, isn't it?
It's a massive... It's nothing... Well, there's many things worse than a hypocrite, but a hypocrite is, you know, that's exactly what he is. He's just showing himself up. Because any one of us could go on Google and within 5 seconds find years' worth of evidence of Warnock, I think, class.
I think it's done the rounds, a couple of videos of him doing, not similar to Nuno, but kind of a, you know, showing that again, so...
The Colin Wanker anagram has become so tiresome for me. I'm bored of it now. But the guy is literally a wanker.
He's become a parody of his own anagram.
Yeah.
He's just a horrible guy. Sometimes he says the right thing. You fully agree. You said you like a conversation with him.
I'd generally go and have a pint with him, because away from football, he seems like a good laugh.
But he's straight down the line guy. Yeah, but knows his football, but then just things like that.
When he loses his mind, he's a nasty piece of work.
I think we've said it before on this podcast that if Neil Warnock was Wolves manager, you'd rally behind him. You would actually love him as the manager.
I mean, ironically, like in the lead up to the game, he was actually on our side, but FFP, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He actually was against all the other old dinosaur managers, and he was saying, no, just if they sign Neymar, don't care. But
that makes his job look... makes his job look better than what he's done now, doesn't it? When he's been able to compete with us, we've not.
Of course, it does, yeah. It's ironic that he was on our side, but now I can only imagine that perceptions of him have changed in the main.
Especially, he was given Championship Manager of the Year or the season, wasn't he? As well. A couple of days beforehand?
Well, I love that little collage picture where he had like the Warnock Manager of the Season and like Nuno's Manager of the Month with all his staff. That's class.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, we better actually talk about the game itself, because the football match did happen. What were everyone's thoughts in the game in general? Were Wolves deserved winners over the 96 minutes on the balance of play?
We started off quite well. The first 10 minutes, I remember vividly, it was like the house on fire, because we had a couple of shots in.
Jota had a chance, Neves had that one from long range.
That's it, yeah. And then I think as the course of the game led on, we kind of got dragged down to their level with like the long balls, and the game kind of... I think I'm trying to think who had the better chances. I know that we had Bonatini and Costa, certainly had a chance to put it to bed. But then, like I said, they had Gunnarsson shot that flew by.
Bamber had that header, didn't
they? Bamber had the header, yeah. So it was actually quite a very even game. Two contrasting styles, but as I said, I think we sort of regressed our playing style and went down to we got into a bit of a scrap with
it. What you're going to get with Cardiff, they're just direct aerial bombardments from, long throws from like 50 yards away from the goal. It's just it's so ugly to watch. But you can't fault it for getting them to where it works, obviously.
At this level as well, doesn't it? It's effective.
I'm amazed they haven't got a tail sponsor like Middlesbrough. It's exactly the same. 2 weeks, two normal our way of football against prehistoric football, and that's what it is. It's kick and rush, big ball in the air, do what you can, muscle them out, but. That was the good thing about it, that we dealt with it this time rather than in August, where we were all in awe of it, and we bottled it, and we learned, and we can now give it out as well. It was one of them things where we all knew what was going to happen, and as soon as it started getting in the trenches, that's when the crowd started getting up. I mean, not them, they didn't sing once. I don't know if it came out on telly or not, but they were silent throughout the whole game. I mean, they might have been their biggest crowd for 46 years or whatever it was.
But it was the sellout, wasn't it?
Well,
they say it was the same.
The top seat was open, though.
Yeah. So you couldn't see the red seats with the little men. But there was it was pretty much sold out. But yeah, they were silent. It was just full of day trippers. And
that's what happens now, though, doesn't it? You've seen it in Molyneux a few times this season when it's been a sellout. But because half the people ain't been there, they often don't have the chance, that they're a bit reluctant to join in with the chance. When things get a bit, as you say, in the trenches, they're a bit nervous, and then that sort of spreads. But. I don't know where we're going.
Off topic slightly and going to the Hull game, what did everybody think of the chance on the screens?
No, awful. Just don't do it.
I don't agree with that. I don't know why.
I think they started doing it before the whole game, not necessarily the chance, but every time we got a corner, the Nuno fist bump against Leicester was just frowned upon the screen.
I don't mind that.
Yeah, things like that, and that we are Wolves in the rotating head and stuff. Yeah, that's fine, but
it's the graphic that I don't like, because it sort of like changes to some sort of like pixelated grey thing and makes Nuno look horrible. The chance, they need to avoid that. That's poxy, isn't it?
I think it's something they're trying, but that's not. I don't think that's the finished article of what you see on screen. I think they're trying to do something, but that wasn't how it was supposed to have turned out.
They tried it. It failed badly. And it kind of, having them on screen, it kind of forces you to kind of join in with it, and it's not organic. It doesn't work. And they've had it at Villa.
Oh, we've got to sing now, everyone.
Football fans don't like being told to do that.
You know what Wolves fans are like? Tell them they should do something, they won't do it.
The way
it'll be perceived is, they'll see something on screen about Helder Costa, they're straight away, they'll go, I ain't singing that now.
What if we don't put the words up? Oh, I'm going to sing now.
If you just put up on the words, don't sing ever, we may sing.
It's just daft little things, you know, giving the chance. You know, whenever you get like an announcement in the Safe Bank, all the Safe Bank just literally flick the V's back at the cameras whenever there's an announcement. So when you tell the Wolves fans to do a particular chant at a particular time, it just ain't going to work. We're too stubborn to be pushed along that way.
And it's kind of like going back to the original screens with a Hey Gringo and Mexican Wave and Magic Sponge bouncing across the screen. That was 90s stuff. And it was you bring that back now, it's funny. But you don't have words on the screen. Grow up.
Did on the chance, was there like a little football on top of all the words going along, telling you how when to sing certain words?
It kind of came up, like the words came up onto the screen from that, like from the middle,
like a karaoke.
Can't we have like a little Nuno head going across all the words? Shows you how to sing them.
I prefer a Jeff head.
when it says "Hey, Helder Costa," the word got bigger in the middle, so it was "Hey," like that, not an audio feature, but. Yeah, so it kind of was emphasised when to sing it and how to sing it. It was just nonsense.
Anyway, back to Cardiff. Any particular notable played wells, not so played wells in that game?
Bonatini, I think it'd be the only negative, but he did okay. He should have buried that one chance that he had, but I don't think anyone was below an 8 out of 10.
No, that's the thing with him. He's not good enough and he's massively out of form, but he still doesn't hide. He'll still try and try and try, even though nothing's coming of it anymore. He'll still try. So you can't really have a go at the bloke. He's been picked and he's doing his best.
Yeah,
he's just not good enough. There was no one shirked anything. Everyone was putting the bodies on the line, not like Cody at Middlesbrough and Bolly the Wall, but
he didn't look like he was ready for the physical side of the game at the start of the season, and he seems less now with it.
But I think even when he was in his goal scoring peak, there are still fans questioning if we go up. I don't think we should sign him anyway.
Answer me this. How long have you had that mattress? Because it's looking even lumpier than my lockdown love handles. And while those might be more cuddly, a lumpy mattress is doing nothing for your comfort levels or your sleep. So whatever body you're rocking, put it on a Nectar mattress. Prices start at just $499, and you get $399 in accessories thrown in. That includes a Nectar mattress, mattress protector, cooling pillows and sheet set, a 365-night home trial, and a forever warranty. Go to NectarSleep.com and get hugged.
Yeah.
Because the doors will open to us when we do go up means, do we really want to spend money on having him in the team? Would he actually even play when we have watch his face, Andre Silva up front? Which we will.
Cristiano Mendes going to pull some strings one last payday.
They call it the City of Dreams. Okay, that's interesting.
They're going to market and everything
because they've got a Dreams bed store at Bentley Bridge.
Anyone else at all played well before we get into working man's man in the match?
Obviously Neves,
Cody, apart from the penalty.
Yeah,
I thought he was solid again. Some of the times he drops a shoulder on strikers and literally just fall over the majority of the time because he spins in that easy.
I think that it was glaringly obvious how much we missed. Well, for the great work of Oscar Burr, Doherty, just Doherty being there, it's just everything's just so much more balanced.
It's just a relief to have both Neves and Doherty back.
I think Saez played well considering that was his third 90 minutes in the week. I think he did quite well. I think he didn't do anything wrong, particularly wrong.
He got his customary booking.
So that's mandatory.
That's a good market. That is
a mandatory booking.
Oh yeah, I did get in on that as well. Safe booking as part of the
printing money.
Bet builder.
Did Douglas even have a shot?
Yeah, did we all? I put. Yeah.
We all had like Douglas as part of.
I think we all.
I don't think Douglas even had a shot all game, did he?
I think we all put a bet on Douglas, didn't we? At some point.
I don't know what. Odds bumped up by about 40 to 1. I think so. They obviously knew something we didn't.
Oh, should we do working man of the match, gentlemen? We've got an email about it as well in a sec, but let's regale us all with who we thought our working man's man of the match was.
Jonathan Ruddy.
Jonathan Ruddy gets it from Stu. You're doff the ear cap and you fall back a Carling. Anyone else for your working man's man of the match?
I want to do it. You know how like bookies have like markets without the favourite. Mm. I'll do my working man's match without the favourite, which is Neves. And I'll also go for Ruddy. I think that penalty save. Probably just give it to him as well after that, to be fair. But yeah, right. I think him or Doherty, but I will go with Ruddy.
And the good thing about it as well, that they made balls that were obviously going to come into the box, and he ain't been the best recently. He caught everything. He was commanding.
Mm. He didn't look nervous at all, did he?
He was psyched up, and there was, from even the first mini, because there's a bit of anxiety as soon as he moves. But he just looked commanding. Look, you shall not pass. He was, yeah, absolutely superb.
Dan, who are you going for?
I'm going to give it Ruddy with Neves in the market. I just because I think he...
Just in spite of Adam.
Yeah, Neves had a good game. Obviously, the free kick was £15.8 million worth or whatever the fee was. But Ruddy, so saying, every aerial bombardment, he was there. The defence as a whole handled everything that they chucked at us. One penalty save, and I still think he gave Hall at the eye, so he knew Hall was going to miss. He'd missed, but I believe Medina had already missed before he'd even stepped up, because it took that long for him to actually tag the penalty. But yeah,
because the second penalty, it seemed it still hit the underside of the crossbar slightly to me and came out.
The bottom half of the crossbar.
Yeah,
that close.
All that close.
It's like the 4 o'clock on the rounds.
Yeah. We're that close to it not talking so happily about it.
Although Neves, this is that one earlier, that Neves has got the most goals outside the box in the league. 5.
Of course he has.
That was a funny say. He's only had three touches in the opposition box all season. He's scored 5 from outside the box. The guy is unreal. The guy is unreal.
He's an alpha male.
Yeah, he's a king among men.
Future Portuguese captain is. Once Ronaldo stepped aside...
He'll take his place.
Stepped aside.
What did I say?
I think you said stepped aside, didn't you?
Yeah.
There we go. Anyway, email.
When he's retired.
Yeah. Rare email, as we always get, from Mr. David Westwood emailed us about 4-pack of Carling, is the title of the email.
Does he want one?
He may do. So, hello podcasters, as you've been yearning for emails, I thought I'd drop you this mail to add to your now no doubt bulging virtual mailbag, because yes, we are... Got too many emails to read out on this podcast. Too many emails. So you're probably wondering, what is this email about then? So he starts off with being a keen home brewer of beer. Bear with me here. I listen to the Home Brewing Podcast, which comes from the US, in which the producer speaks each week to a knowledgeable guest on varying subjects to do with making of beer. Right, are we with us so far?
I'm just looking at Stu's face. It's lit up like a Christmas tree.
One of the most frequent guests, and indeed my favourite by a country mile, is one Dr. Charlie Bamford, who is the endowed professor of brewing and malting sciences at the University of California at Davis. Very nice, very nice. This is a prestigious position in the academic world of brewing. Dr. Bamford hails from Wigan, and his knowledge of science involved in the brewing is breathtaking. In one episode, the talk turned to his origins and the fact that he had written many books and even one on soccer, inverted commas, goalkeepers. The host asked, who is your team? Is it Manchester United? No, he replied, it is Wolverhampton Wanderers. A lifelong fan, he went on to say his ambition as a child was not to be a brewer, but to be a goalkeeper for Wolves. Now, the point of the email in which David points out. Before leaving England and going to the US, he worked for Bass and headed up their brewing. He and his team developed and produced the best-selling beer in the UK, namely Carling Black Label. How apt that your 4-pack of working man's of the match seems to be invented by this very said man.
That was the reason, wasn't it? That's where you came up with the 4-pack of Carling, because of Mr. Bamford, yeah?
Of course, yeah.
Bamford or Bamford?
Bamforth. Oh, that's Bamforth, I think. Let me check the email again. But yeah, there we go. Email.
Should we all get goalkeeper tops with Bamforth on the back? And we can hand them out instead of the four-pack of Carlin.
Yeah, Bamforth. I don't know why I said Bamford for some reason. Dr. Bamforth, congratulations.
A very good anecdote.
Yeah. Favourite Wolves goal is strip, and we'll get it with Bamforth on the back.
Oh, no. That's how that'll be.
All right, do you remember that? The green one that Mark Starr wore without the black.
That was my favourite one.
I think he had like black pads.
Yeah, like black pads. Stripes at the top, yeah, as well.
Goodyear sponsor.
Yeah, the green one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the green one had a black W with a red.
It was red shoulder pads, wasn't it?
Yeah, because the away.
Nah, before that.
Oh, yeah, the green one with the nutmeg one with the two black stripes.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the first guy off the top I ever had. So I'm going to go with that one.
I'm scaring eBay every week to try to find that in my size now.
I don't think I'd find it an extra large boy for me, to be honest.
Well, we like your emails, anecdotes and stuff like that. podcast@wolvesfancast.com, and we'll read them out. Gentlemen, finish off Cardiff then. What a key win, really. What an absolutely key win.
We're going to ruin them like we ruined Bristol City.
I'm so glad you finished that sentence with
this. Throw your money on Fulham now.
Yep, absolutely. I think they're going to be completely demoralised now.
Yep.
I mean, Bristol City with it. I mean, look at the... Was it the week after they got spanked by Villa? It was much longer after what we did to them. I didn't see that happening again.
But, you know, just like Bristol City. I mean, I still hear commentators say how much they've fallen since they lost that game to us.
Yeah.
It's an annual occurrence, though, isn't it, Bristol City?
They are exceeded anyway, didn't they, when they was pushing us over Christmas.
My dark horse expectation was doing so well. It was doing so well. But all in all, gentlemen, which will be seen as a vital and...
It's a
key win in the season.
As big as the Derby Keogh win.
He's putting it up there.
Throwback.
Shout out Marlon Harewood.
It was also
the Goomba.
It was also a vital and key for my bet as well.
Yeah. It would be forever known as the Marlon Harewood moment. Anything like this now is the Marlon Harewood moment.
Yes. We have our Muscat moment as the opposite one.
Yeah.
This is the Marlon Harewood moment.
Fathead versus Wanker on Tuesday. He's massive for them two teams. If Cardiff drop points again, that's it. Fulham all, they'll take
off. It's a massive game.
If they'll lose that game, I still believe that I can be caught by 6 or 7.
Well, what lovely permutations after Villa's loss to Norwich that Villa can no longer catch Wolves at all this season.
Stat of the day. How lovely is that?
I was walking the dog earlier. I was thinking, forget mind the gap, it's mind the leagues from now on. We'll never play you again.
Yeah.
Well, I was walking a dog. You think stupid things when you walk a dog, didn't you?
See, Fulham could finish second, and then Millwall sneak into sixth. Because Millwall are on the Fulham-esque run of form as well.
Wolves reserves beating Villa in the playoff final. All glorious.
Ben Marshall showing class.
Yeah.
Incredible. Fulham's run as well for the end of the season is very good as well. Very favourable.
Yeah.
But I think they might have Millwall still to play Fulham. I'm thinking.
Yeah, Fulham at... Fulham got Millwall and Villa got Millwall as well.
Well, should we talk about the next game, gentlemen? It's Wednesday night against Derby County at home. Permutation Street, gentlemen.
Permutation Street.
So,
does it have a Rover's return as well?
Yeah. It's a nice little cul-de-sac. So basically, if Wolves win and Fulham draw or lose to Reading, after Fulham, I presume, are playing Wednesday as well.
No.
Are they playing Tuesday?
They're on before us, I think.
So if Wolves win and Fulham draw or lose to Reading, Wolves go up. Both wins for
They've
Wolves.
Got Reading.
Reading at home. That's three points, isn't it?
So it's an ask for saying.
So the
Fulham
Birmingham
draw,
promotion day is fast arriving.
So if Wolves win and Fulham draw or lose to Reading, Wolves go up against Derby. A win for both teams means if Wolves beat Birmingham on Sunday, next Sunday Wolves go up as well. Yeah, and that's the permutation, really. Oh, but also, if Wolves win a derby midweek, we'll be looking at Fulham's game on Saturday tea time against Brentford at home, which will be on the telly. And obviously, if Fulham draw or lose that game after a midweek win, then Wolves will be promoted before that game.
4 points out of the next two won't get promoted, will it? If we draw against Derby, then beat Blues, will that get us?
I don't think so. I think people have been saying 5 points,
yeah,
haven't they?
Five.
Oh, that's a pity.
Oh, I hate it when we go down to points. Got to get 5 points and I'll just be promoted.
We've got a good record against Derby recently, though, haven't we?
At home, yeah.
It always seems to be at home we do better.
George Savile, two goals. I mean, it was awful. Jeremy Alan on the wing.
Still love that quote from Alex.
Priest.
Yeah.
Still love that quote from Alex. The worst thing that George Savile did at Wolves was score.
Yeah, and he kept him here.
Derby, of course, won their last game 3-0 at home against Bolton. They're fifth at the moment with 68 points, 3 points above seventh place. And they've won the last two as well. But they hadn't won in nine before that.
I don't really see this game being too much of a problem, because prior to that win, they were doing the normal Derby bottle job. As much an annual occurrence as Bristol still is.
They are really the Wolves of the 90s, aren't they? They always seem to have a great team every year. And just something happens.
Yeah, they just implode.
When they got battered by Sunderland the other week, I thought that was Derby done.
That was a dreadful game, though. Both teams are dreadful in that game.
As soon as the first goal went in for Sunderland, massive deflection. You could tell the vibe in the stadium. There was here we go again.
Yeah, it's almost like they are expecting it here as well.
It's going to be another sellout on Wednesday. Now, team-wise, do you think that Nuno will go back to your tried and tested full strength 11? Because the last couple of games with suspensions and what, he's had to mix up slightly. But do we think your classic starting 11 that we've seen the last couple of weeks?
I think one of Costa and Cavalera will be on the bench.
Yeah. I think it's best to have one of those. One of those three.
I think
he needs to be on the bench. I think Jota. Well, if he needs to recover still, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's playing his way into fitness, and we can carry him doing that.
They ain't got the quickest of defences, have they?
Richard Keogh's still there.
Who's their centre back? They've got Shackle playing.
They've got Curtis Davis at the back, have they?
Yeah, yes, they have.
Yeah. Have they still got Huddleston playing?
Yeah, as he's suspended. A good mate, Andy Vyman.
They've got Vyman, they've got Vidra. Yeah.
Vidra's the top scorer of the league.
Is Vidra got 20 goals this season?
He's top scorer. I can't remember the exact number, but he's top scorer.
And obviously they've got Nugent and Jerome as well.
The difference. But they're gonna. That's the good thing about them, mate. That they're not gonna. They're not gonna come and sit back.
Yeah, they're not gonna sit back because they need those points, don't they? Yeah. To secure that playoff space.
They're just playing to their hands.
A phobia up front, I'm presuming. I would choose a phobia up front.
I think you'll go Costa, Cavanjo three on Wednesday.
The Holy Trinity.
Yeah.
I'd prefer to have one on the bench, to be honest, personally. One of the three to bring goal.
I think a phobia will. I still think a phobia will start. It'd be like Jota and Cavalero, I would say, that start. It's irrelevant anyway, because we're going to win regardless of who we play up front.
Put Enjoy up front again.
Bright, Donovan, Wilson up front, still win.
Oscar Burr ride right of the front three.
Yeah, Oscar Burr. Oh,
the Rasmus.
It is the quiz question for all ages now. Everyone's going to know the answer to who scored that.
Oh, right, okay.
Not just who he is.
Rafa Mir. Bring him back, why not? Just throw him on.
I think that was one of Uncle George's recycling processes with Mir. I still think he's going to make the grade here.
You say that, and then he starts the first Premier League game of the season.
Yeah.
At home to...
I remember when Mairoff scored on the first Premier League game of the season. It was his debut, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was like a consolation goal, wasn't it? And I thought, yes, here we go.
He's going to be an asset to us.
He did look decent on YouTube, to be fair, but I think they saw the wrong one, because there was a Hoffer as well who played up front for him, wasn't there? And I think it was a littler one.
And he everyone good. Looks decent on YouTube.
Majanji Beer looked good on YouTube.
I still think Majanji Beer.
Probably so did Finkler as well.
Was a gem.
Guillaume Finkler looked good on the YouTube as well.
There's a good YouTube video I'd advise the listeners to have a look at. There's a highlight reel of Mairoff playing against, I think it's Kazakhstan for Austria. It's got some funny music. Basically, all his touches are awful. He doesn't win an header. He barely gets half a foot off the ground. It's worth watching. And a highlight reel with Scooters, how much is the fish in the background? If you ever get a couple of minutes.
Right, we'll go nicely, we'll tangent nicely onto Twitter Corner. People's questions they send in, we summarise them and answer them back for them through the medium of podcasts. Andy Smith, anyone got any football related superstitions, and what are the weirdest you've ever heard from others? Is anybody any football related superstitions on match days in general?
Can't mind now. That I'm not cutting my hair until we won the league.
Did you straighten your hair for Cardiff?
Ever since the Villa game, I don't know why I did it, but for the following game after Villa, was that Reading? Yeah, it was Reading that
game.
I straightened my hair, the bottom of my hair, because it was all really curly, silly. And ever since then, I've straightened my hair before the game. Yeah, lost, have we?
Well, it's all down to shoe straightening.
So that's going to continue. But it's like if I've got the same underwear for a game and we win it, they're washing put in a separate section, so I'll put them on the day of the game. It's only with football I do this, no other time of the day, no other time of the week. It's just things like that, I always do it.
Non-extreme superstitions, I'll never bet on Wolves to win. And I hate people telling me that they think Wolves are going to win. So when every time I do the prediction round here, I hate it. I hate people predicting Wolves going to win because I feel like it's going to be like some sort of...
Let's do predictions for Derby, by the way. We've forgotten about that. Thanks, Dan, for bringing that up. Dan, what's your prediction for Wolves Derby?
2-0.
Yeah, 2-0.
2-0.
4.
4-0. Oh, just 4.
So it's still going to happen. Someone decent is going to get spanked. So 4-0.
I'll say 2-0. Why not? To Wolves. Don't worry. Anyway, any superstitions? Anyone else?
I don't have superstitions. I used to. I think back when we was in the Premier League under Dave Jones, I wore the black away kit to every home match where we went through a run of not losing at home. I don't think it was that long a run, but I don't think we lost at home for like about a month or two or something. I had the black, because I wore the black home kit for the first one of that run, I thought, oh, I'll keep wearing this again, and I think we got spanked by someone eventually. I also thought, I don't believe in superstitions anymore. I just threw it off, and then I thought, well, that's that, bollocks done.
I used to have I still have it in the wardrobe. I used to have a red frog, not a live one, just a stuffed, like a cuddly toy frog that we got from, I think it was Cambridge Services, so either Norwich or Ipswich away, and we were just something to do. Just
how did you rank those services? Out of 10,
it's all right, decent.
Decent service.
6-7.
Okay, that's a good services.
Yeah, no bother.
It's no Gloucester. No Gloucester services.
Oh, that's a nice service.
That's
isn't
like
it?
The Champions League of service stations. Gloucester services. My God,
you felt like you had to take your shoes off.
Yeah.
But I had this red frog that I put in my back pocket just for years, and then we got relegated twice. I thought, I can't take Fred Owen anymore.
When I was a kid and used to play Football Manager, if we were like, if whoever team was, if we were winning a big game, and I'd notice I'd be in a certain position on the chair, I'd make sure I wouldn't move for the rest of the game, because I used to think that if I move slightly, the computer might decide, oh, I'll score through the team. So you just freeze. Come on. Don't lose.
Yeah, that kind of thing happens if I've got a coat on or not at the match as well. Like if I take my coat off in the first half and we're winning, and I can't put it back on then.
I'm similar to things like that. Just say like I go to the Wolves game and I'll buy a cheeseburger at the ground for some reason. If we won that game, I'll make sure I have a cheeseburger in the ground. And I rarely eat in the ground, so just daft little things. I'm wearing like coats and stuff. Yeah. Something like that. I'll keep the run going.
Chris Wood, if you could have your own personal Wolves Mount Rushmore, what four faces would you put other than Steve Ball? So the classic Mount Rushmore, you've got your four Wolves legends. Who would be on your Wolves Mount Rushmore?
Nuno.
Not Steve Ball.
Nuno, Jeff, George.
And Laurie, obviously. Lee Laurie, man of the people. Laurie,
yeah.
Nuno, Neves, Malcolm Ora,
Robert Taylor.
Chris measured have like four Paul Butlers on his.
Fourth. Mike Stowell.
Oh, Stowley.
Yeah, I used to love Stowell as a kid. Hence
Stowley would be on mine.
As well.
Yeah, Stowley would be on mine.
We're showing our age here because you get like the older ones. It'll say like Billy Wright, Derek Dugan, John Richards. Well,
some people that do podcasts might even never seen Mike Stowell play. You never know, do you?
No.
Yeah, Stowley would be on mine. I couldn't put Nuno on there yet.
Why?
Not
is
yet.
Is he the best Wolves manager in our lifetime? Yes, he is. It's a fact.
I can't go down this rabbit hole without being ridiculed.
This is an entirely different podcast debate, this is.
Yeah. I know where you're coming from, Dave, but we've already seen in the future.
I'd put Stowley, Majanji Boyer.
I think you're all forgetting one key player. I think we're all missing off Alan Nielsen.
Yes.
No one's mentioned him yet.
Yeah, there are people I could put on there that people would wholeheartedly disagree with. Easily.
Put it out later.
Yeah,
put it out later.
Anyone else, Adam? Your Mount Rushmore 4?
Yeah, that's got to have Stell easily. I think. I'm trying to think over the years who else I've really ultimately. Absolutely love
Ebanks Blake. Put out there, Mick.
Yeah, you could have like Mount Rushmore for managers. You could have like your Nuno, Mick,
and half of Dave Jones.
Dave Jones.
I think you'd have to put Dave.
We'll give Dave Jones on there, and then
Dean Saunders.
Dean Saunders, obviously, and then yeah, him or Stahl at the end, or Colin Lee.
Not Rob Edwards.
permanent managers only on this one.
But that ruins the whole Albion have had more managers than points game if you're counting permanent managers.
They can have their own little silly Mount Rushmore, can't they, with their shit managers.
Well, tell us what your Mount Rushmores would be. Well, Chris B3 Chris. Very nice. Chris B3 Chris. Crispy Chris, baby.
Rice Krispies.
Yeah.
Okay.
What other bits of British etiquette does Nuno need to learn?
Queuing. He needs to form a good queue before he comes out to the game.
And needs to know the rules of the queue as well. Kind of looking over people's shoulders, tutting.
No talking.
British etiquette. Good question, by the way, Chris.
That is great. That's a good question. British etiquette. He's already mastered one, saying sorry when he doesn't need to say sorry. Yeah. And he's mastered that one already. So
Wetherspoons before Greg's of an afternoon.
Mm-hmm. What?
Because if you go to Greg's first and you have a sausage roll or a steak bake, then you got that taste, and you can't taste the ale properly, can you? So, if you work up an appetite, then the Greg's tastes better. You feel like you're spending more money than you are. It's genius.
You're so the backbone of Britain. You are
the backbone of Britain, right there. By the way, backbone of Britain. Wetherspoons and Greg's. Yeah, that is the backbone of working man's Britain.
Holding the door open for someone and saying thanks, but not looking at them.
That's just rude.
No, yeah.
That's rudeness. Well, holding the door open is a good start.
Yeah.
Trying to think of British etiquette. What? We should know this.
Really.
We should.
No, I just wouldn't know. I'm just scum when it comes to etiquette. Horrible guy.
But saying sorry when you don't need to say sorry is a key one, I would think. Calling a phone number and expecting to be on hold for a while.
Yeah, and then moaning about the cost of the premium phone.
Yes, when it's a free phone number.
Yeah. Is it moaning about things in general?
Yeah, just moaning, I would say. I think Adam's going to just research instead for us.
It's all about dining etiquette, this is. Dines properly and has his fork and spoon in the right.
Does Nino need to put his mayo in the fridge?
Let's not go into that.
I don't like mayo. Mayo's horrible.
Tipping is British etiquette. We don't do it, do we?
No.
So he needs to stop. Hopefully he doesn't tip anyone in, like, Fiume or somewhere.
Why would you tip?
Exactly.
I hate Americans. They ruin the country. They ruin the world with tipping.
Pay them properly in the first place. Don't need to tip.
That's the job.
Living wage.
You don't pay someone to do the job on top of the payment they get from their employees.
Living wage.
If you got a decent couch driver, like we have Jeff, the Atherton, for a whip round on the couch... Tax free. That's worth it if they've gone beyond.
Allegedly tax free.
No, it is tax free. Beyond the pale, and they've got you there quicker than they should have done. Then there's a reason. But that is the only time I've ever have. Or if I will. You're glad you asked me back there.
That's a fair point. I understand where you're coming from there. But like someone bringing out your plates of food at a restaurant and taking your plates away, I'm not tipping you for that.
Nonsense.
Sorry. You haven't cooked my meal. I'll tip the chef if it was a really good meal.
Has anyone actually ever done that? Tip the chef if it was a good meal? Have you done that, Dan?
No.
He's never had a good meal.
I only have such a sandwich. I do that myself.
This podcast just got a lot more real.
Yeah.
Final
question from Jack. Rank Middlesbrough, Cardiff and Bristol City away this season in terms of best away days.
That's a great question, that is. And also, what a great three away games we've had out of those three.
I think Jack will appreciate that. Jack did tweet that he was going off us slightly this week, and he appreciated one of the tweets, so he brought it back. So I think he'll like that even more. So Middlesbrough, Cardiff, Bristol City in terms of best away days, rank it.
You'll have to have this one. Sure.
We'll say worst to best.
I think in terms of magnitude of the result, I'd put Cardiff top.
Well, it's your choice. You can
then I'll probably put Middlesbrough second.
It just goes recent, doesn't it?
I don't think
Bristol was huge at the time because they was putting pressure on us.
Yeah, and then ultimately they're not even a rival anymore.
Exactly.
That reduces that. Middlesbrough were never a rival, apart from the opening day of the season. Yeah, but that was just the adversity of it, wasn't it? Against having two sent off.
Yeah, that is the only thing you can judge it on, because Middlesbrough wasn't a playoff rival, but it was 20 minutes back to the wall. And it was us against them. Oh, did you see how he had a brilliant performance against Mr. Atwell yesterday?
Yes, I saw.
Joker. But yeah, Middlesbrough.
Where was he refereeing at?
Is it Leicester? Is it Newcastle? Is it Newcastle?
Wasn't that one, was it?
I know it was whatever it was controversial again.
He didn't send that proper off, did he?
It was Mahrez. He did Mahrez a penalty.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah, that was a proper job.
Mike Dean's son, isn't he? It's fast becoming.
We've had it for 7 years, haven't we? Every time we have, well, you know what you got to get. Yeah, Middlesbrough, it was good at the time, but in the grand scheme of things, he got us back on track, but he wasn't defining.
So why don't you go Middlesbrough, Bristol, Cardiff?
Cardiff, the last 3 minutes and the way it deflated them, but Bristol City, because of the run we were on and because of the run they were on at the time, that's going to be the best one. Because even the celebrations at the end at Bristol City was more intense than it was at Cardiff, even though Cardiff lasted longer. So yeah, Bristol City.
We were pretty much dead and buried at Bristol City.
Yeah, exactly. We came back from the brink of despair. And it was, I couldn't see when we went down to 10 men any way out of that.
Frankie Fielding was a big player in our season this year.
Yeah.
Because that moment pretty much, once he got sent off and Douglas scored the free kick, it was...
We just came back into it, didn't we? And then Cav as well.
Yeah. I mean, when Nuno said that they practiced playing with 10 men, which if you practice playing with 10 men, you know you're going to go down to 10 men at some point. And it showed, how we played at Man City as well, when we were disciplined and back to the wall. We can play like that if we need to be. You know, we don't get to 10, but it's the defensive aspect of it. And even with 10 at Bristol, I didn't see us coming out of it. Well, damage limitation at best. Yeah, Frankie Fielding did one, and that's the moment of the season for me.
Anybody else for your three ranks, best away days?
I still put Cardiff as mine, just because of the nature, the magnitude of the game. Then the other two, I probably would switch from Middlesbrough and Bristol around, but I still have Cardiff top.
Dan?
Yeah, I'm going Bristol City first. I think because at the time it was huge. These Middlesbrough and Cardiff was just the icing on top of moments like that. Your season goes one way or another, because we dropped points before Bristol City. Everyone was putting the pressure on. I don't know what the points difference was at that time, but I know it would have been a lot closer than it was now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
God, yeah. I mean, there's other things as well, like Hull. When we beat Hull away, that was a massive statement as well. And
it was so unexpected, really, given...
Yeah, we ain't got a good record there, and they were just recently relegated, and we didn't win.
Even beating Derby, what, second game, was it?
Yeah. Well, I said it there, I said after Derby, it's on record, that we'll win the league. Easy. After Derby, I said, this team's got to win the league. No doubt in my mind. And there hasn't been all season long. We proved right, both of us.
Point to me there, by the way.
Yeah.
another audio feature. This is Adam speaking.
Unexperienced. No, yeah, I think Derby should be in that as well, because it was a statement of intent. So we are here, we are better than everyone, apart from Sunderland, who we've yet to beat, but surely will.
Reading was under the cosh as well, weren't we? Away,
yeah.
That was Reading was more of a professional ground out performance, rather than spectacular. I suppose you can rank it as spectacular because it was ground out, and we're not really. Well, at the time, we were just all about flair, but
we've only got Sunderland to beat now.
Just Sunderland.
That's for the full setting.
Five games to go, gentlemen, and 5 points required. That's it for the bonus podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to our sponsors Hill & Smith Limited and Opera Creative. Follow us on social for your lols and trolls. It's Topping Wolves Fancast, and you'll find us there as well. And we'll be back post Derby, where it could be it. Could be done, gentlemen. You never know.
Have we got a pod after Derby?
We have one scheduled, yeah. Okay. Scheduled.
Okay.
That's concerned.
No, I thought I was on that one, but I just assumed this was that one.
It's bonus.
Bonus one.
Does this count in the actual numbered order?
Of course it does. Of course it does. Yeah.
So when you get like the Doctor Who specials, that you have to watch them in they're sold separately, but when you have to watch them in order, you have to kind of mess it up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm just going to nod and agree.
It's like the X-Files, when you put the two X-Files films, one was after season 5 and the other was after the original series ended.
But like I hate films and stuff where they go out of order. Just keep them in chronological order.
What's the true order of Star Wars?
What do you mean, how you watch it?
As in the first three are actually 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
But then there's Yeah, that's what
we're kind of worse. Basically, what happened is Star Wars went, hang on a second, we can make some money out of making more Star Wars films. Let's set them before the earlier ones. And then
there's still different variations.
Yeah, then George Lucas sold it to Disney. Disney thought, we can make some money out of Star Wars.
Still waiting for the Jar Jar series.
Yeah.
It has to happen.
So you got, he's the Emperor, isn't he?
He's technically the evil one out of all this.
Yeah. The ones from 99 onwards, then three. So you got 1, 2, 3. Then the originals from the 70s, 80s. But in between that, you got Rogue One.
About the cogs are going in Dan's head trying to do that.
There's quite a few articles on the internet where we still say there's different variations on top of that.
Stop talking Star Wars!
We can just stop. WrestleMania's in mere hours from this recording.
We've gone. How long have we gone?
We were keeping it real. And then we've dropped off.
We could have gone a whole podcast without mentioning the old wrestling, but oh well.
It's done now.
We have to say it real quick. Anyway. All podcasts done. Hopefully, we'll see you on a potential promotion party next time. But if not, don't worry. Hopefully, it's coming soon. I'm trying to be positive, Adam. Don't worry.
Yes.
I'm trying to be positive.
You will get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. For this week, it's bye from Stu. Bye from Dan.
Bye-bye.
Bye from Adam.
Bye-bye.
Bye from me. See you next time.
The U.S. Border Patrol has exciting and rewarding career opportunities with the nation's largest law enforcement organization. Earn great pay with outstanding federal benefits and up to $20,000 in recruitment incentives. Learn more online at cbp.gov/careers/USBP.